This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Yesterday, lawmakers in Charleston heard a scathing review of RISE West Virginia Housing Restoration Program, a troubled flood recovery program for victims of the June 2016 flood. A legislative audit of the program cast doubt on whether it's effectively reconstructed any homes yet. The audit comes almost exactly 2 years since the flooding that killed 23 people and destroyed about 1,500 homes. The auditor's office presented analysis of invoices and vendor data to lawmakers during a committee meeting. In a press release, Governor Jim Justice disputed the audit's claim, questioning the reconstruction. He says 18 families have been given keys to new homes. The RISE program was temporarily halted earlier this year after it came to light that $17 million had been mismanaged. Governor Justice called for a realignment of the State Commerce Department, the agency formerly in charge of the RISE program. As a result, Commerce Secretary Woody Thrasher was forced out of his position. The National Guard is now overseeing the program. West Virginia Public Broadcasting is launching its Recovery Project this summer, aimed at providing important information on substance use disorder and providing opportunities for community discussion about the region's opioid epidemic. Part of this effort includes sharing stories of life in recovery. Executive producer Suzanne Higgins recently visited with Zach Melba of Huntington, West Virginia.
As their kids draw on the sidewalk with thick pink and blue sticks of chalk, Zach and Kathy Melba sit together on a step in front of their lovely home in Huntington, a beautiful family on a beautiful day. Later inside, Zach shares a personal journey where this domestic scene would have seemed unimaginable. He says he's blessed and he knows it.
I wouldn't have the dimension of gratitude that I have for life today. It wouldn't feel so amazing waking up in a nice house in Ritter Park, had I not slept under a bridge, had I not eaten out of a trash can.
Zach is 35 and marking 8 years in recovery this summer. Looking back, he recognizes the troubled child that made some regrettable decisions.
As a kid, I was really disconnected. And that feeling of being disconnected from everybody around me left me with a big empty hole. And I filled that hole with whatever would fill it the quickest. And it turned out to be drugs and alcohol.
Zach says for him, it started innocently enough, sneaking alcohol with his buddies at teenage parties. But then he needed more. Within a few years, he was on OxyContin. A few years later, shooting up heroin.
There's a lot of controversy over whether it's a choice or it's a disease, and I promise it started out as a choice, but no kid ever said, when I grow up, I want to be a junkie, or when I grow up, I want to be a prostitute, or whatever, wherever you landed in life, you know, wherever this thing wound up, there comes a time when you lose choice. You lose power and choice over the drink or the drug.
To feed his habit, Zach committed crimes. He was arrested for a third time.
I had robbed a CVS pharmacy April 9th, 2009. And I had some other stuff previously from the year 2007 that I got in trouble for. And Judge Ferguson made it clear to me he wasn't playing, that this wasn't a game. And they sentenced me 7 to 31 years for all three of those charges that I had. And they suspended that sentence to drug court. So I got a reprieve, I got a stay of execution, and if I could do this thing and I could finish this program, I could stay out of prison. So when the pain of remaining the same becomes greater than the pain of change, we change. And finally, the pain had become great enough for me.
Zach says being sentenced to drug court saved his life. 12-step programs, drug and alcohol education classes, drug screens, full-time work, and accountability. He owns what he did, and he is not a victim. Today, on top of a full-time job in construction and time with his family, he volunteers as a recovery peer counselor.
I was a three-time convicted felon, once for a violent crime, and a drug addict, heroin junkie, alcoholic. So for sure, if I can do it, anybody can do it. And that's the message. You know, that's the message that we try to send on a daily basis. But, you know, through drug court and other 12-step programs, they taught me a long time ago that if you want what we have, you might want to do what we've done. And you might expect to do it for as long as we've done it for. But I live a life second to none today. You know, I live life one day at a time, and I work. We work. She works really hard. Family, you know, spiritual things, a connection with God. It's definitely amazing, and I wouldn't change it for the world.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Suzanne Higgins in Huntington.
Zach's story is part of West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Recovery Project. Emphasizing recovery from substance use disorder is possible and help is available. And a program note for this evening, watch Understanding the Opioid Epidemic with a segment on Wyoming County, West Virginia, tonight at 9 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Areas of fog this morning, partly cloudy skies in the north today, mostly cloudy in the south. There's a chance of rain and thunderstorms with highs today in the 70s and 80s, partly cloudy overnight with a chance of rain and thunderstorms in the south, lows in the 60s. Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. And by the Academy of Arts at January's in Charleston, with Mermaids and Dragons Art Camp and Broadway and Princess Camp starting June 25th in Charleston and Taze Valley. January'sAcademy.com. The Trump administration wants to change the rules on disposing of coal ash. The waste left from burning coal is often toxic, and new data show many waste sites in the Ohio Valley are leaking. In a West Virginia town, residents live with the nation's largest ash waste site. In the last of a three-part series, Brittany Patterson visits Little Blue Run, which activists call an example of the risks of weak regulation.
Kurt and Debbie Havens' ranch-style home is the family gathering place. Their two boys grew up playing in the streets in this quiet neighborhood in Chester, West Virginia. Now, their grandchildren do the same.
Everybody wants to come to Grammy and Pappy's. Okay.
On a recent drive through their neighborhood, the couple point out how things have changed since a coal-fired power plant moved into the region more than 40 years ago.
It's all wet all down through there.
Deb points to a swampy area where a small trailer sits. One of the few inhabited homes left. Most have been bought out by the electric utility First Energy.
They bought him out because this pipe here in the ditch was contaminated.
The ditch was contaminated with heavy metal-laced water from the country's largest coal ash waste site, Little Blue Run, located just blocks away. In the 1970s, the Bruce Mansfield coal-fired power plant was built in nearby Pennsylvania. It brought jobs, but the plant also needed a place for the toxic remnants of the coal it burns. For decades, the ash mixed with water was piped 7 miles from the plant into Little Blue Run. The impoundment sits on the bank of the Ohio River, a drinking water source for millions of people. For years, the water glowed bright blue.
And we used to say, welcome to Jamaica, because that's what it looked like.
In many ways, Little Blue is emblematic of the problems posed by the hundreds of largely unlined coal ash ponds and landfills nationwide. And as the Trump administration moves to change rules on ash sites, activists say Little Blue is a prime example of the need for strong regulation. Debbie Havens says she and the neighbors had to organize to get help.
First Energy became our number one priority. We had to stop it. We had to save our community. We had to save our lives.
Putrid smells like an open sewer sometimes choke the neighborhood, which is especially hard on Deb, who suffers from COPD and asthma.
I have had to sleep in my walk-in closet. There's no vents in there. And I just felt like I was in Germany, like I was a prisoner of war.
Perhaps more alarming are the seeps, or water, leaking out of the waste site into people's yards.
It was coming out of the hills. You know, the seep might be here tomorrow, and 2 days later you come, here's a seep over here.
Kurt, like many people in the neighborhood, was diagnosed with cancer, then high blood pressure and diabetes. Then he had to get a pacemaker. He says he has no family history of any of these things. The couple know it's hard to prove a connection to the contamination, but it's still a worry.
Having children grow up in this area was fun, and our grandchildren. But I just, in my heart, I think, did we damage them by living here, their health?
For years, the Havenses and others in the community raised their concerns with state regulators and the company. In 2012, with the help of watchdog group the Environmental Integrity Project, they sued First Energy, alleging the leaks and contamination violated the law. The company was fined $800,000 and agreed to close Little Blue. Around that same time, the EPA finalized a federal rule to regulate coal ash disposal sites. It requires companies to monitor and publish groundwater data. If a site is leaking, like Little Blue, the rule requires it to close. Now, under the Trump administration, the agency is considering changes to that regulation. The EPA argues the changes will give states more flexibility. Environmental advocates call it a rollback.
So the states always have the ability to regulate and to keep the people safe, but they didn't. Little Blue is the example of that.
That's Lisa Graves Marcuzzi. She works with the Environmental Integrity Project, and she says what has happened at Little Blue is the cautionary tale for the EPA.
So I say to them, well, we're going to be right back where we started from, because West Virginia and Pennsylvania both shucked their responsibilities and didn't really do enough to protect the people who were directly impacted.
Recent groundwater monitoring data required by the 2015 rule confirmed dangerous chemicals are leaching from the unlined coal ash waste pits. Of the 7 sites that reported data in West Virginia, there is evidence that all are leaking. Some chemicals are being found at levels above federal drinking water standards, says Lisa Evans, a senior attorney for the environmental group Earth Justice. An Ohio Valley Resource and WFPL analysis found lead at 6 sites at levels above federal limits, and arsenic, which can cause cancer, was detected in wells at 4 sites in West Virginia.
And this is industry-produced data, but data is showing us that across the board, there is groundwater contamination at almost every site in the country.
Some industry groups say EPA's rule changes are needed because state regulators need more flexibility. Jim Rower is executive director of the Utilities Solid Waste Activities Group, a trade association.
We're not going to have a reduction of protection as a result of the proposed changes. What we'll have is a more tailored regulatory approach on a site-specific risk-based standard.
How you doing?
Back in Chester, Kurt and Debbie are building a new house, farther away from Little Blue. Still, it's hard to leave the place they've called home for more than 40 years.
We never thought we would be doing this at our age. This just was not what we thought our lives would be.
The EPA is reviewing comments it received for the first round of proposed changes to the federal rule. It will propose another round of changes in September. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Brittany Patterson in Morgantown, West Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible with support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.